I would like to greet you in the name of Christ. The work that has brought us together in this place is kingdom work. There's a lot of jobs out there, and there's a lot of things that could be places in the world of occupations that could be filled with all the energy that's in this place. But you have chosen a very, very important place in God's kingdom to fill. Sometimes teachers feel like they're just filling the place that no one else would fill. But it's not that way at all. Teaching is a high calling. I'm a licensed electrician by trade, and I remember some years ago, we have to take continuing education credits to keep up our license. There was an instructor that told us, and see, we're looked at as the, we sometimes look at ourselves through the wrong lens. Because sometimes we tradesmen feel like we're the lesser of the group of the that keeps the world running. We're the fellows that twist the wires and stick the pipes together and things like that. So we can think of ourselves on a lower level. But he told us to start the class off. He said, I want you to understand tonight, you are all professionals. You might not feel like one, but you're going into a field that's so important. Every one of you has a special place. And especially if you're just beginning, this is your first year, maybe going to be your first school term. You may feel kind of intimidated, kind of like you're standing at the shadow of a mountain. And before you is a huge challenge. But the greatest resource you have is the one that built the mountain. And the very one that furnishes the handrail all the way down to the bottom. And it'll always be there as long as we reach for it. It's God Himself. Thinking this morning about the responsibilities that we face in the classroom, the challenges of teaching and imparting knowledge. The title, Why Children Learn Differently, could be a question. Why do children learn differently? And there may be a lot of questions that came with you. I would like to attempt to answer some of those questions. Why do children learn differently? Well, the answer to that one is really quite simple. It's because God created them differently. He created them as individuals. But there are specific learning struggles that we see that are more common than others. And I'm going to be basically working with the most common of them all. If I would take all learning struggles and we pile them up here, 85% of those learning struggles would be represented as dyslexia. The way we process sound. And the way we understand the way symbols, letters, represent those sounds. And the way those symbols work together to build words that we use to express thought. And then the final catcher. To be able to build those words and put them down on paper that they make sense. To express my thoughts. We do it in different ways. Children, although they look the same, they come with, you know, the same limbs, the body is shaped. You know, we can't see a tangible difference in this child, but we could see maybe an academic difference. It makes us ask some real questions. What's going on? But just because we have never been there doesn't mean he or she isn't there. Now realize I'm speaking to people that are interested in education and involved in education. But I'd like to ask a couple of questions. And I'd like a hand raise for this. How many of you out here are teachers? Okay. Now, how many of you did well in school? Okay. How many of you enjoyed school? The largest majority. And that's typical of a group like this. Because how do they get you to be a teacher if you would not have answered positively to any of those questions? It would have been a little bit difficult. It had took some persuasion. It had took feeling the heavy hand of God just resting on you pretty heavy to make you finally say, I'll do it. Because I've been there. I couldn't raise my hand to any of those questions. Now, if I would ask who loves to learn or who enjoys learning, probably most all the hands would have went up. And I could raise both of mine. But the way that questions were answered is the very reason that teachers struggle to understand the child that doesn't process. Because most of us have never looked at education through the window that they look through every single day in the classroom. The way they face the book that's open before them and the page that lies before them and the words that are on that page. Just a little bit of background of where I'm coming from is I was a fellow that struggled in school. I did not enjoy school at all. I enjoyed working with my hands and I picked up my grandfather and my father's trade. And when the school board asked me to teach school, I thought that was a pretty hilarious thought. I didn't hardly even imagine why someone would take the time to do that. But they were serious. And as I saw that they were serious, I got that way too. No, you don't want me to teach school. And I don't want to teach school. But God didn't let up. His thumb just got a little bit heavier. And I couldn't find any cheap tickets to Nineveh. So it's like, finally, Lord, I'll do it. But I just hope you know what you're getting us both into. And he did. My interest was always on the child that struggled. And I could detect a struggler before it was really evident in the academic performance. Because of the look in his eye and the body language that he had, or she had. And then my wife and I, we work full-time for Christian Light Education. We travel around visiting schools like Brother Jonathan. And as we travel around, we would see these children everywhere. And teachers found out this fellow has kind of an interest in these children. And they would flock to us and they'd be full of questions. And I'd try to answer questions. Do you have any ideas? Oh, I had a lot of ideas. But finally one day I told her, we're just passing out Band-Aids is all we're doing. We don't know what we're doing. We can't detect what's going on here. And then we began the study of children that learn differently. And it was in one of those studies that I found out what my own issues were. I was sitting in a seminar, and it was on dyslexia. And as this lady was describing what dyslexia looks like and how these people respond, I told her, I said, that's me. That lady's talking about me. And for the first time, I knew there was a name for what I had. Or the way I was. And that was somewhat of a comfort or a confirmation to at least be able to identify. And then when we found out how common it is. Did you realize that 1 out of 5 people process with difficulty? 1 out of 5. And of all the learning struggles, dyslexia represents 85% of all of them. The struggle to process the way language works and words work affects all of the subjects in school. And it's one of the foundational things that will, a thread that runs through all of them. And it is a thing that will quickly identify the struggling student in different ways. So let's talk about dyslexia a little bit. Now, I give this talk fairly often, but it's to different groups. And today we're talking to educators. So we're going to think about going into our classrooms and in the child that's performance, they're struggling. But to understand that struggle is real, we're going to back up and talk about where does it come from. The brother mentioned this morning that things like this are on the rise. One of the reasons that it's on the rise is because it's being identified. For centuries, this has been amongst us. It's documented. The struggle to be able to understand the written word and to work with it. These people identified themselves with very, very traceable characteristics that we could track back through time. But longer ago, they were simply called word blind. And it wasn't until the 1900s, which is the century of discovery and more technology coming into understanding things, that it got its name dyslexia. And it has to do with the Latin words, the Latin roots of language. Of course, dis means not. So a person that struggles with something like language, it actually begins with the way they understand sounds. Now, before an infant is born, one of the first things that an infant can do neurologically is hear sound. That's the first sense that they can have. And as their brain develops and they begin to hear sounds, and they begin to classify those sounds as sounds I recognize, their little processor has gone to work. They're actually developing knowledge. And the smallest pieces of knowledge are called phonemes. If we go to the technical world, we'd say in the computer world, a megabyte of information. These little phonemes that are stored in that processor, they're processed then and stored in a memory. And they can be withdrawn, recognized, stored away, added to. The brain is starting to go to work. And after birth, that child can add the other senses, all of the other 4 senses. And to that knowledge that was already stored there of recognition of certain sounds, they can now add that sight, smell, taste, feel, to help them establish a concrete understanding of what's going on. That is such a miraculous happening as those little processors go to work. But not all of those processors are the same, nor do they work the same. There's a lot of different kinds of vehicles in these parking lots around us. And they're different, and they're similar. They look similar because they have similar uses. They have tires, they have a body, a frame, doors, windows. But lift the hood and there's a difference. Those parts aren't interchangeable because they're different. And one of the important differences to every one of those vehicles is the wiring harness that connects everything together and makes it all work together. We're going to liken, it's a crude representation, but we're going to liken the wiring harness to a person's neurological system, brain system. And we don't all have the same neurological systems. We don't all have the same wiring harnesses. Therefore, we don't perform neurologically the same. Although we have a lot of, our windows and tires and doors look a lot alike. And it's hard to see the difference. The only way we can see it is through performance. Okay, this little child is just, they're growing up now, they're maturing, they're just a toddler, but they're starting to do fascinating things like talk and develop a vocabulary. And this child, the parents watch this happen, and soon they actually are able to purposefully say a word. They can neurologically process the thing of stretching the vocal cords to imitate sounds that they've heard, and there's a thrill in the heart of their parents when they utter that mama or daddy for the first time. But that vocabulary grows quite rapidly. And as they start doing things and putting things together, and you can see they're thinking their way through these things, they're processing these things, we can see that brain developing. And we're convinced that's the smartest little chap or lass. You know why? It's because they're mine. That has a lot to do with it. And as we in school, we work with them, we're working with someone else's property, precious possessions, their children. That's what can make this area a touchy subject. Because when this child goes to school and we come back with the report that he or she is struggling, and then somewhere along the through the conversation, even the word smart gets used. That word smart, the word intelligent, so often we make a tragic mistake because we want to measure that somehow. We use comparison often to measure that because we need some benchmarks. But we have to be very, very careful because we're not comparing apples to apples. And intelligence is so often measured with the measuring stick of academic performance. When we say, we know they're smart. Well, you betcha they're smart. And when we're thinking of dyslexia and what dyslexia is, this process, someone asked, we had a woman here a while back told me, or asked the question, why is everybody catching this? Don't worry, it's not contagious. So it doesn't matter who you're sitting near this morning. But when I tell you that 1 out of 5 people deal with it, and a group this size, it's okay to look around. I just ask you not to get to pointing at each other. Because you may know someone, or maybe yourself. But, yes, that's how common it is. And as we go back to our classrooms to deal with this, that's how common we'll find it. But it is directly inherited. Directly, genetically passed on. That's how it comes. Now, there are other conditions that can mimic dyslexia through brain damage, drug and alcohol abuse, brain trauma. Those things can mimic, but then they aren't, and they cannot be reversed and dealt with. Because when a child, if they have a dyslexic brain pattern and wiring harness, that means they're going to handle, they're going to process sound and letters differently. It's just a given. It's not a question. It's a given. See, before we could technically get into this thing, and I'll get there in a few minutes, but let's back up in time again. Like I said, for centuries this has been going on, that these people were identified. So, with time and science developing, the desire to study and learn things and know, we knew this was a neurological situation. So, people donated their brains once they were through with them. And today, in the Harvard Brain Bank, Harvard University Medical School, there are lots and lots of brains stored in clear containers. And these brains have been studied and studied because with those brains is the life story of the individual that once owned it, of their struggles, their accomplishments, and the peculiarities of their life. And they began to see consistent likenesses between brain shapes and life. They said, hey, there's something going on here. We don't know what it is, but you can see this one area, the person that struggles to understand the way letters work and words work, his brain is shaped different from the one that doesn't. We'll talk about that. You've heard of the right and left brain person. A non-dyslexic person that does fine with understanding the way letters and things like that work, he carries 10% more of his brain matter on the left-hand side. But the one that struggles with these things carries equal amounts on both sides. So the dyslexic person actually carries 10% more brain matter than the non-dyslexic. And I'm not going to say the normal, because who knows what normal is. You'll seriously question that probably till I'm through. Okay, this brain is different. It's physically different. How did I get this physical difference? In myself, I am dyslexic. And I clearly understand those differences. I didn't understand why for many years, but I do, and everything that goes with it. I've been the student and I've been the teacher. But one thing that is common in dyslexia or any learning struggle is most of these people soon at a young age realize they are different. There's something different about me. I'm there, you know, the teacher has given us the assignment. We've dug in, we're going for it, and I'm here pecking away at this thing, and that's the way I read, too. And I notice the little fellow right here, his finger's way down the page. How can he do that? Why is he doing all his work? That bad boy is skipping over things. And I plug back in here again, and I'm just about to the halfway point when he turns the page. I lose my concentration again. But I'm also beginning to think, in this difference, it's me that's not keeping up. It's not him that's going ahead. And that negative thought begins to develop at a fairly young age in a low grade. And we start to realize that we're behind everyone else. And we begin to think negative of ourselves. And it turns into emotional baggage that we will carry about ourselves that will actually reach out into other parts of our life. And this emotional baggage gets quite heavy. As we move on beyond the years of school, it goes with us like a cloud in the sky that's ever present, reminding me of who I am and what I cannot do and where I struggle. And this will sometimes rob people of beautiful opportunities in their life to step out, step up, because they're afraid they can't. And they probably could, maybe, with some help. So these children, as we grow and we mature in our school experience, we start to develop ways to hide this. We spend a tremendous amount of energy hiding this. I, as a teacher, would never walk to the chalkboard and just write sentences. For 22 years I was in the school, but I didn't do it. I was scared to death. I couldn't spell the words. It was always either written on my hand or a little piece of paper. And I had to tell my students, I don't read well. They accepted that. They were fine with that. Children are so understanding. And as we were having class, maybe science class or social studies class, and I'm reading over the lesson, you know, and we're going through this thing and we're just enjoying it, and I'd see a little sparkle out there in their eyes, and I didn't say a thing that was funny. So I'd learned. Say, okay, what's going on, Mr. Whit? It doesn't say what you just said. Well, okay, let's fix it then. And sure enough, I would have misread something. And why did I do that? I can't explain why. I just know that it happens. It's because of the processing equipment. It's because of the wiring harness we have. I got it from my dad. My father is dyslexic. But does that mean that we are lesser? No. No, it doesn't. And I'm in this talk, I don't want to at all lift up the dyslexic. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to help us understand what it's like to be in that category and what happens with these children. Sometimes we're innocent as teachers. We ask questions like, you're no further than that? And we never realize how hard the work is to get that far for that child. What it's taking to get there, the processing. It's work. My wife and I, we screen children for dyslexia. The screening wears me out. And then to sit down every day and go to work in a classroom like that. And sometimes the teacher says, if he would just keep his mind on his work, if he'd just stay busy, he could get his work done. You know, if I'm sitting in a classroom where I want to be more than anywhere else, right out there somewhere. There are no books out there. There are things I can relate to. There's nature out there. It understands me. Often these children have a special way of relating to animals. There are things that don't constantly prove how dumb I am. And it's important in working with children that struggle that they realize that we really want to help them and that we want to understand them and try to get them to talk about it. Coming along beside a child that is struggling and assuring them it's going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. We're going to work through this and it's going to work. I'm here for you. Sometimes you'll see performance increase just because they were able to sit down some of their emotional baggage. And they're not trying to constantly drag this stuff with them. You're working with people, little people in the stage of life to where this is very real. But the next stage, when they become adults and parents, they want to put these things away. They want to forget that experience. They'll push it under the bed and behind the couch. They don't want to remember those struggling years in school. But what scares them to death is when their children start showing the same characteristics and struggles in school. They think, oh no, And they don't realize that genetically they're responsible for what's going on here. But if we can just understand ourselves, there's not a thing broken here. It's only different. People speak of LD children, learning disabled. I'd like to rephrase that. LD children are just simply children that learn differently. That's all. And there's nothing wrong with being different. We have done very poorly in the field of education in dealing with the variety that God sends us in our classrooms. We have a curriculum. It's the same curriculum every year. The books never change. Well, hopefully through updates and things like that. But, I mean, we're given these tools. Curriculum is a tool for us teachers. And we don't understand how to take these differences using the same tools, how to bring the differences along together. And we're going to struggle tremendously until we accept the fact that there are differences. And it's okay to be different. When we as teachers can accept that, that it's okay to process differently. Hey, I didn't mess up. God doesn't make mistakes. This is His design. He designed these people with this different wiring harness. He designed 1 out of 5 people that processes sound differently. And the way we've confirmed more of these things is that with the technology we have today, and my wife and I took a graduate level course on brain processing and dyslexia, and in that course we got to actually see some videos or pictures and things of how a brain works. And this, an MRI takes a picture of soft tissue. It's kind of like an X-ray. And the brain, the soft tissue of the brain, can be examined very intricately with an MRI. But an fMRI watches soft tissue in action. It's kind of like a video. So with the invention of fMRI, we were able to watch the brain in action. So we could see that when a non-dyslexic person picks up something and begins to read it, we could actually watch what's happening as that information hits the neurological system and starts traveling on the wiring harness. What parts of the brain start lighting up? Because the brain is similar to any other part of the body. The miraculous way God has created us is our body automatically sends oxygen-rich blood to whatever part of the body is being used. So, with different tasks assigned to different parts of the brain, when we activate that part, it gets a shot of blood. Oxygen-rich blood. So we can watch this information hit the network. And with a non-dyslexic person, you can actually see it. It's very graphic. The brain is green and the blood is bright red. It's interesting to watch how it travels through the network on the left-hand side. It's headed right back here behind this ear into this lobal area back here. We'll just, for simplicity, we'll call it the learning center. It goes through the processor, and we're processing this information, and we're bringing it back here for storage. But for the dyslexic, when they pick up something to read, the same thing happens to begin with, but it starts balling up here in the temporal area, and only trickling back here to the storage. And you'll even see places on the right-hand side begin to light up. Some of that information, the brain miraculously, because they're wired differently, is using an extra network to try to carry that processed material back here where it needs to be. They're wired differently by creation. And as As this process is going on, these children, if they process with ease, it just carries right back there. But for the child, it doesn't. It's work. It is real work. One of the things that compounds the pressures, as we're reading and we began to carry this emotional baggage along with us, we become sensitive to pressure. Timers. The enemy of the struggling student. If you already struggle, and then I ask you to struggle quickly, I have just increased your weight, your pain. I found a special place for timers when I became a teacher because I knew what they did to me. It's at home baking cookies. Well, there's a few uses for timers, but you know what? The child that thrives under the timer, they just love the challenge of the timer. You can bet you they process with ease. But we've had children to ask us, when we're screening, are you going to time me? And we could ask, why? Don't you like to be timed? No, I can never get my speed drills finished. Every day that child faces failure, is it because they don't know how to do it? Is it because they can't? Is it ability? Or is it just simply tick, tick, tick that's destroying their comprehension, their concentration, and it's measuring what I can do? That's right. So I encourage you as teachers, be careful how you use your timers. I did away with them in my classroom. I found other ways to measure and challenge children to put themselves into it and stick with it. In reality out there, where do we use timers? I'm not sure where they got invented, but I'll guarantee it was a non-dyslexic that did it. But in all reality, do we use timers in life? Let's say you're a cabinet builder. We don't get all of our work to get things together and set the timer. And before the timer goes off, we fly into this project, cutting and drawing and slashing. And no, we want to do it carefully and thoroughly. That's the way we want our students to work. What about motivators? How do you motivate your children? To keep moving, stick with it, get it done. Well, you can always have a bell to ring. But no, for real. I've been there. I know what it's like. The 100s-based motivations are the most common ones out there. The chart, when the child gets a 100, they get to put that sticker on the chart, or something like that. What about the child that never gets a sticker, very seldom? Been there and done that. We go into classrooms, we visit a lot of schools. We go into classrooms and we see these very creative little motivational charts. The little train that has all the cars behind it running on the rails across the wall. And that represents some type of accomplishment. And then we see the little train that has the engine and the coal car. I know exactly what's going on there. And I know what it feels like. It's not only that that's a daily reminder to me of what I can't do. I also know that that shows everyone else what I can't do. And that hurts the most. I encourage us to think about motivational things that pull a class together. Those things like I'm mentioning here, they're actually things that single out children. But some type of motivation that every child can contribute to. Some type of an ongoing building process towards a goal. And then when we reach it, we're all going to enjoy it together. I have seen that do wonders for classes. I've seen children that were involved in things like that that would look over to this struggling child. They know each other so well. They've been to school with each other. And they'll give them that encouragement. Come on, Bobby, you can do it. It's worth a lot. When Bobby knows that others are pulling for him. Why do children learn differently? Because God made them that way. God does not make mistakes, but He does create variety. And may God be with each of you as you go back and face the beauty of the variety He has given you. And may He grant you the grace to have the patience to reach out to these children and walk beside them and help them sit down their emotional baggage about themselves and lift their eyes to be everything God meant them to be.